And now it's my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. She hails from Visalia. Very exotic location, right? My friend Boo, who's going to be sharing her experience, strength, and hope with us tonight, has been very active in service. She presently serves with the Valley Speaker Series group, which puts on events twice a year. And she's here tonight to share her experience, strength, and hope. Please give her a warm Tulare County welcome.
My name's Boo. I'm an alcoholic. I have a birthday this month, May 18th, 1997. Mike's screwing with the microphone already. My experience, I come from a long line of alcoholics, very proud alcoholics. Everybody works through their alcoholism. Well, they try to function, but they're really not functioning. And so my father got sober in 1978, and that's probably the year I took off drinking. I drank differently than everybody else. Is this too loud, you guys? I feel like I'm really loud. I drank differently than everybody else. My freshman year in high school, my brother was 2 years older, and his friends used to buy the alcohol and then supply it for us girls, and we were told to go in the restroom, drink it as quickly as possible, and then come out to dance with him and his friends. And that's how I learned how to drink. That's how we drank, period. After football games, we would go to parties, and sounds really embarrassing, but we beer bong drank. And so it was always a competition to see who could get 6 beers in the bong and who could drink it the quickest. And my brother always laid odds on me. And I was very, very good at it, and I was very, very proud of the fact. I had a great high school. I went to George McCann, so I could have gone straight from 8th grade to college, but you know, you have to have those 4 years in there, and so I did. But when I got to college, I got because I did really good in high school, because everything I learned at George McCann, they weren't teaching me at Mount Whitney, I'd already learned. So when I got to college, though, there was a problem. I went to a drinking college, but not everybody drank the way I did, and I couldn't find those people that drank the way I did, or people would say, you drink too fast, you drink too much, you get too drunk. And you know, my first thought is, do you guys cuss here?
Yeah.
Forget you, you know, fuck you guys, you know, so I'll go find somebody else who drinks the way I drink. And so that's what I did at college. My first report card in college, I got called in by a guidance counselor, and he said to me, your grades aren't quite what they were when you were in high school. And I thought, that's odd. I'm not getting to class. I'm not doing the work. I don't understand. It wasn't like, you know, at Mount Whitney, et cetera, et cetera. And he opened his mouth and said, do you think you might have a drinking problem, or do you have a problem here at the school controlling getting to classes? And I thought, well, that was pretty freaking rude of him. Mind you, I wasn't going to classes. I dropped out of most of them. And so that really pissed me off. So then I was really going to prove him wrong. So I only did school on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. I only took classes on Tuesdays and Wednesdays from 8 to 8. Then I started having a problem getting to school on those days. So my next semester, but I did better with grades. So my next semester, I even had to drill it down some more. My dad was catching on because he was sober, and I really didn't like my dad, because as children growing up, he was very mellow because he drank, and now all of a sudden, being an AA, he became a father, and he was going to tell me what to do, and that was really odd. I was one of five, and I was at the bottom of the one of five, and I got away with murder, and he was kind of catching on to that I was drinking at school and stuff, and he was kind of putting the clamp on me, and it just really pissed me off, that so I stopped coming home. So then he stopped giving me financial aid, so then I started coming back home. And then he started trying to control my drinking, where I went, who I went with, couldn't hang out with the buddies that I drank, and it just was very, very upsetting to me. So my junior year, unfortunately for my mother, she was in a horrendous house fire, and she was burned with third-degree burns from her belly button up. But I wasn't doing well at school, and so my dad announced my junior year going into my senior year at college. Yes, I made it that long. Screwed up, drunk. And he announced that he was going to divorce my mom after my mom had been in this fire. And so my best plan, because the gig was up, was to come home and take care of my mom, which I did. So I got out of not having to finish college, which I wasn't going to finish anyway. I was probably going to be on the 20-year plan. So I came home and I took care of my mom, and my alcoholism just really, you know, they talk about in the big book switching from scotch to brandy, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I was a beer drinker, and beer, you know, it's not very ladylike to have, you know, 24 beers, and everybody's kind of like looking around in an evening, and I could really, so I started drinking rum and coke, or I started drinking tequila. Tequila didn't work well with me because I drank too much and then couldn't remember what I had done. And my girlfriends from high school didn't want to go out drinking with me anymore because they had all kind of settled down and gotten married and had kids, and I still hadn't done any of that. And so I started hanging out with coworkers that drank the way I did. And my mom started, who was very, very sick. I wasn't taking very good care of her. Even though I loved her, I tried to do the best that I could, but I wasn't taking very good care of my mother the way I should have been. So my mother had a talk with my sisters, and then she had a talk with me about my alcoholism. And by this time, I'd had a brother who'd had a cocaine problem while we were in college. He'd gotten sober. So I had a father that was sober, a brother that was sober, and my mom started telling me that she was going to make me move out of our house if I didn't start nipping it in the bud. And I wasn't about to, so my best thinking was to marry somebody that drank like I did. And so the first chance I did, I asked him to marry me, and he did. Poor guy's been paying for it ever since. And so he was a rum and coke drinker. And, you know, when I drink rum and coke, I can't remember a freaking thing that happens. And I don't, and I go places with people I don't even know who the hell they are. I wind up in my front yard in cars that I don't know how I got home and why I've driven in my front yard instead of my driveway, because it's right next to where I've driven up on the grass. One night I was sleeping in my neighbor's lawn chair in the morning. I don't know why the hell I was there. And so my alcoholism was doing things that I thought I had control, but I had no control, and I was hanging out with people that just really shouldn't have been hanging out with. And I wasn't in any trouble, but I was very close to trouble. And so my best thinking was, then maybe I better have a kid, because then, you know, you can't drink during the pregnancy. So I had my first child, and I could hardly wait till that pregnancy was over. But I did have a scare during my pregnancy, because we went on a train ride to the spaghetti factory. That was real popular back then. And my doctor I had seen, I was like 7 months pregnant, and he said, you know, you can have a beer if you want when you're pregnant. But my thinking is, I've never had a beer, so I just didn't tempt that when I was pregnant. So on the train, my girlfriend Patty was with me, and she said, you know, Boo, I drink a glass of wine every night. And, you know, when you tell an alcoholic that, you know, all kinds of things start going through my head. So I thought, you know, I'm going to try a wine spritzer because it's got 7-Up in it. So I had a wine spritzer, and something inside of my brain and my body just clicked, and it scared the holy shit out of me because I knew I wasn't going to stop that night. So I went to snuck back to the back of the train, and I ordered another drink, and I turn around, and my sister, who's 6'2", is standing above me saying, "What in the hell are you doing?" And she took it from me, and she made me go sit in the chair because she knew I drank too much, and I made her life miserable the rest of the trip on that spaghetti factory. No one took me again there. And so, you know, at that point, I had some inkling that I was smart enough to know that when I drank, I didn't quit drinking. I never, ever can tell you when I had one or two drinks, ever. And I always drank for the effect of the drunk. And I loved being drunk because I personally think I'm absolutely hysterical when I drink. And I do things that are funny, and people want to hang out with me when I'm drunk, and, you know, all that fun stuff. So after my child was born, the drinking was worse than when I left off. It was just, it was something that I couldn't fathom. Every time I picked up a drink, I got drunk. So I thought, you know what, I better have another kid because that's kind of like a liver break for 9 months. So I had another kid, and I didn't drink through the pregnancy. And so I thought to myself, after two kids and not drinking through pregnancies, really, I knew about alcoholism, but I thought, how could I be an alcoholic if I know that I can give my liver a break for 9 months? There's no way in hell I could be an alcoholic. And that is such bullshit, because the first chance I had, it was like my 10-year class reunion. I promised my best friend, I was nursing, I promised my best friend I'd be back in 3 hours, and I saw her 12 hours later. And she was calling me saying, "Your daughter is crying, I am pissed, get over here." And I kept ignoring the phone calls, thinking, she's smart enough to go get a bottle, you know. My child was 3 weeks old. She's got to be smart enough to go get a bottle, you know. And so when I got home, she said, "You need to nurse her." So I went into the room to nurse her. And then I hear my husband say, "Well, I don't think she should be nursing her because she's pretty drunk. I think the baby's going to be drunk." So I didn't nurse from there on out. And my doctor was pretty pissed off at me. And I knew things were getting bad and getting ugly. And I knew that things needed to change in my life, but I didn't know what needed to change. I didn't know who to talk to. And here I have a father who's in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I knew a lot about the program. I had gone to Alateen, but I didn't click with the people in Alateen because, you know, they didn't go to George McCann and they didn't go to St. Mary's Church. And, you know, I thought I was so much fucking better than them. And so, you know, pinky drinking the tea shit kind of, you know. And so my parents didn't, you know, force any of those kind of envelopes. Little did I know that I would end up here. And so, you know, at the end of our drinking, it's a pretty scary story to me, but it's a... when I drank, I always got drunk. And I married somebody who drank a lot, so that way he couldn't call me on my drinking. And one day we went up to some friend's house. I had asked my husband to put planter boxes on the... My husband's in construction, put planter boxes on the front of the house because I was going to plant some plants. And he wanted to surprise me. He had built a stable tax thing for some horses up at some friends up on Merton Drive. And he wanted to surprise me and show me what it looked like. And I said, "Okay, I'll go up there. But when we come home, I want you to do the planter boxes." Okay. So we get up there. And I can't even express, it was something like at a Home and Garden, this thing he'd built. And I was like, "Okay, you've been spending all your effing time up here, and all I want is two simple planter boxes. Pretty easy, right? Easy peasy." So I get pissed off, I have a drink, and then I think, oh, I'm really going to be pissed. Put the kids in the car, and I drive home, and I start drinking, pounding them. And I call every half an hour, "Where the F are you? Get your effing, you know what, home. You're going to do these planter boxes." Starts thunder and lightning outside. I'm getting pissed. I'm thinking, now I've got to go back up to Merton Drive and pick his ass up. So I start slowing down on the alcohol, which is one of the first things that this is God doing for me. What the hell? I don't know how to do for myself. So I start slowing down, and pretty soon my husband comes home stumbling drunk. And if you don't think I didn't get planter boxes, you're effing crazy if you don't know me, because I got planter boxes that night. They looked like complete shit, so I took an axe and a hammer to them and knocked them off the house. Then I chased him through the garage to knock the shit out of him. And my young son, who is six, calls 911. And pretty soon, there's some police at our door. And I'm freaking out. And the neighbors are all out watching the Morrises. And it's a freaking party. And so I proceed to go out the door. And I have some marks on my arms because we got in a fight in the garage. And it was a shoving match. But I'm bigger than my husband. I shoved the shit out of him. But when he grabbed me, he left marks. So I took the officer into the garage to show what happened because there was a window broken. Because I hit it with an axe, but I said something different. So the police officer says, well, it was either Prop 12 or Prop 13 at the time where you couldn't leave two people domestic violence together. One had to go. So guess who was drunker at that time? The husband. So they handcuff my husband. I start crying. Oh, my God. It's my fault. My fault. Don't take him. So they handcuff him, and I turn around, and my kids, a six-year-old and three-year-old, are staring out the window. And my stomach sinks, and I think, I can't do this to them. I can't do this to them. So I go through the door, and I shut the window, and they ask, where's the policeman taking my daddy? And I said, to grandma's. Quick thinker. Fucking quick thinker, man. So off to grandma he goes for 6 days because they lose him. My husband's driver's license is missing an N in front. So it's a Friday or Saturday night. So I go to the court on Monday, and there's his name on the list. And I wait in the courtroom all day. I have to call in sick to work, and my husband doesn't come out of the court. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me tell you, that night at 3 o'clock in the morning, he called me and he said, where the fuck am I? I said, I don't know. Where the fuck are you? The kids think you're at grandma's. And so that night after that happened, I went and poured all the alcohol in our house out. But I didn't know why I poured the alcohol out. But I did pour the alcohol out of our house. I had enough smarts to know that I'd probably drink it all if I sat there and thought about it. So Monday, I went to the court, and no husband. My husband calls me and says, I'm going to be there tomorrow morning. I go to the court. No husband. Mind you, I'm calling in sick. Have a little bit of a cough. 3-day cough. District attorney wants to press charges, domestic charges. They have pictures of my arms. My fault. So Wednesday morning, I'm sitting there, and I'm by myself, and there's my husband's name again, and I'm nervous, and I'm drinking some water, and mind you, I haven't drank this whole time, and I don't know why I'm not drinking, because this would be a good time to drink, and I've decided to myself, somewhere in the back of the mind, this is all due to alcohol, but I don't know why, and so I'm sitting there, and in my purse is this thing, and it's a prayer book, and it says, dear God, if you dot, 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 and it's got a blank space, I will dot, dot, dot. So I started saying, if you just let my husband show, I'll quit drinking forever. And I kept saying that over and over, and then I thought, what the hell am I saying that for? I mean, that's stupid. I can't do this forever, but just until we get out of trouble. And I kept making it smaller and smaller and smaller and making bargains so I could drink again. And so it's 4:30, and they call me into the courtroom, and there's a pillar. So I sit behind the pillar because I don't want the judge to see me because he's my sister's neighbor. And so my husband's in an orange suit, shackled, looks like shit, because mind you, he's a small man. He looks like shit, and he looks scared, and he looks pissed. And the judge picks up a manila folder, and he says, Mr. Morris, you don't even have a traffic ticket. What in the hell is going on here? And he said, are you going to be welcomed into your house? And my husband looks, and the judge looks, but the judge can't see me because I'm behind the pillar. And so the judge gets up, and he goes, can I help you? And I'm his wife. So so the judge asks me to come up, and I'm thinking, oh, God, I hope he doesn't recognize me. I look like my sister's twin. And so he explains that he thinks my husband and I might have a drinking problem because of how the argument escalated and stuff, and that we might want to try Alcoholics Anonymous. And a frickin' light went off, and I thought, you're going to sentence me to AA. So he releases my husband. No trouble. The DA dropped the charges. I don't remember. He did get in trouble for something, but that got expunged or whatever the hell it is. I'm such a legal beagle. We've been there so many times. And so we go home. We get in the car, and John puts his arm around me, and he goes, oh, my God, if I don't need a drink. And all of a sudden, I just shit bricks because I've poured out all of his alcohol. I've poured out all of my alcohol, and the man is going to be livid with me. And I said, well, honey, I've poured out the alcohol because I don't think we need to drink. And he said, well, good for you, but stop it. Johnny's get and go on the way home. I'm like, but I can't. I can't. I said, I can't, because when the alcohol is present, he said, you know, I know what you're going to say to me. You're right. You can't drink, but I can. So I said, well, can we go home and talk about it? And we went home and talked about it, and I won the battle for about 2 weeks to a month. But I quit drinking, and I didn't know why I quit drinking, but I just knew that my kids deserved something better, and I didn't know what they deserved better, and I didn't know how I was going to do this or why I was going to do this. And my life started getting a little bit better. Mind you, I didn't try AA yet, okay? Didn't try AA, and my life was getting a little better, and then there was this girl that I worked with that she was in AA, and I did not like the bitch, and that's why I wasn't coming to AA. She was mean, she was shitty acting, she treated me like shit, and there was no way that I was going to go to AA and let you people degrade me. I'd already degraded myself by doing what I did when I was out there. And so my father called and he said, hey, I heard you're not drinking. Yeah. Why don't you try AA? No, it worked for you, but it won't work for me. My dad said, well, just go to one meeting. No. Well, then about 6 months later, my sister goes to AA, and all of a sudden, she's just a completely different person. She's doing this thing with this sponsor bullshit. She's got a big book, and she's pouncing that big book. She's got color in her face. She's got a little skip in her walk, and she's hopping around as happy as can be. And I'm thinking, bullshit, that's not fair. I got more time. I got 6 more months than she does. By the day, I have more time. So I said, I'm going to try this AA thing. So she took me to this place called Breath of Fresh Air out on 264, and they happened to be having a water balloon fight that night and squirt guns. And I said, oh my God, I'm home. And my sister said, I'm getting the fuck out of here. Breath of Fresh Air became my home group. And my life, they kept saying to me, get a big book, go to meetings, get a sponsor. So for about 3 months, I kind of fooled around with, and my life was getting better. And so I called my sister's sponsor, and I said, hey, can I borrow you until I have a sponsor? She said, well, I want you to meet with me, and we're going to talk about sponsorship. And I said, okay. So she said, I want you to write down what you expect from a sponsor. And I said, okay, that'll be easy. And she goes, and then I'm going to write down what I expect from a sponsee. I said, okay, we're going to meet for coffee at Denny's on Saturday at noon. I said, well, we're going to meet for coffee Saturday at noon. This is my gig, my time. You do what I ask. Okay, I'll do it. I was desperate, needed a sponsor. So I go there, and my list says, please be nice to me. I want a sponsor that's nice to me. I want a sponsor that wants to be my friend. I don't want to have to work too much because I have 2 children at this sponsor. Don't want too much of this big book stuff. And my sponsor's list says, you will you'll make 3 meetings a week, and one of those meetings I will be in, you come find me. You will meet me once a week, Sunday, from 6 to 7. You will get a big book. You will start working the steps immediately. You'll find a home group. And you will take a position at your home group immediately if you have to clean ashtrays. I don't give a shit. You just do it. You will make sure that I know that you're at these meetings, because I will know if you're not there. I had to do these worksheets where every page I had to read, and she had questions about that page, so I can tell you anything and everything about the big book. And I had to potluck once a month, and it had to be at my house at least twice a year. And I had to read pages 82 through 88, and I can't remember the sec. One was Into Action and Working with Others. And I had to read them every morning. And then I'd have to call her every morning and tell her, yes, I'm sober. But I didn't have to talk to her. I just had to say it on her answering machine. Yes, I'm sober. And that felt stupid. And I did all of that. And I still have her today. She's still my sponsor, but today she is my best friend. And today we go and do things together. I'm grateful for the breath of fresh air, because people in the breath of fresh air made me go to conventions, and we had a blast. Yes, you did. You know, Looper came up to me one time and he said, you know, I don't know what you're doing sitting in the back of the room, but you need to move your ass up to the front of the table and you need to start talking. And Bill E. and Mr. Westfall, Larry Westfall, invited me to sit in between them. And Bill E. and I found out that we had close to the same birthdays. And, you know, I started working the steps, and the skip and hop in my sister's step, mine was 10 times higher because I was working 10 times harder than she was. So I can tell you, you can lie to your sponsor and not do any of the stuff, or you can reap the benefits and do all of it. Because, you know, my life today is not perfect, but it is fucking amazing. I have a job that they pay me to discipline physicians that aren't behaving. Can you imagine an alcoholic? You think that they try to get away with it. It's hysterical. And they pay me major amount of money to do something I'm not even qualified to do, and I just love it. They're so silly, they want to promote me. And I'm just thinking, fabulous, because I'm going to get more money. But I know that it's not all about money. It's just that it's a great job. I go to Porterville, and there's a sunrise in the morning. Today, I'm grateful for sunrises. And on the way home, there's a sunset. And I'm grateful for sunsets. I'm still married to the poor man, 30 years. I don't know why he likes me. He hates AA. He thinks you people are a cult. He's never come into the rooms, but he did stop drinking after 4 years of prodding and saying I was going to divorce him and take the kids. So he's been white-knuckling it all this time. I'm very proud of him for that. And, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me what I really could not have done for myself. The reason I come back to meetings was I was always taught that it's scary to me because both of my children will be in here. I went camping this weekend with my daughter, and she's a spitting image of me. I said, don't you think we were playing that stupid cornhole beanbag? Her freaking beanbags are going every fucking which way, and I'm like, you know, do you think you could cool it on the beer? And, you know, she gives you the stink eye, like I'm going to leave camping, and I'm like, over my fucking dead body, you're not taking one of my cars drunk. And so I know she'll be in here, and the reason that I keep coming back to these meetings and I keep doing what I do is because if I give the message away and somebody catches on, for sure you're going to give the message to my children, and we've got to keep that going, and you've got to keep the sponsorship. It's really important that, you know, you work the big book, that you have the big books available at your meetings, and that you give chips away to people for sobriety. You know, at the Breath of Fresh Air, the first night that we had the water balloon fight, they were celebrating a birthday, and I was watching this girl, this little blonde, and she kept going like this, and she was so happy, she was sober, and she kept going on. She had 2 years, and I thought, you fucking liar. Nobody can be that happy. And Rayanne is one of my best friends to this day. She's a flippin' clown. I mean, we have gotten in so much trouble over at the coast being sober. What I like about sobriety is, you know, I'm a accountable for my actions. And if I'm going to do something stupid and I'm going to get pulled over by the cops, by God, I'm going to do it sober and with my goofy AA friends. And, you know, if they're going to take me to jail, I'm going to tell my husband it's not because I was drunk. It was because I was stupid. And so I'm responsible for my own actions. And Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me that. You know, if you're new here, just keep coming back. Give it time because it really does work. I know this is bullshit. I know you may not want to be here, but this freaking program, if you pick up that damn big book and you do get a sponsor, it really works. This is the best place to be. I mean, I know it's Wednesday night. There's nothing on TV tonight. Swear to God. No Bachelor, no Survivor. Survivor is on tonight. I lied. In 10 minutes. You know, I'm Boo, I'm an alcoholic, and I really appreciate you guys. To the newcomers, keep coming back. And to Washington, Cindy, right? Welcome to Visalia, California. This really is the armpit of California. You really want to be in San Luis Obispo. But thanks for having me, you guys. Have a good evening.